Welcome to Mentioned in Dispatches, the podcast from the Western Front Association, with me, Dr. Tom Thorpe. The WFA is the UK's largest Great War History Society. We are dedicated to furthering understanding of the Great War and have around 6,000 members worldwide. For more information, visit our website at westernfrontassociation.com. It is the 1st of September 2026, and this is episode 390. On today's show, I'm joined by Brianna Gavatt, whose book, There Will Come Soft Rain, recounts her extraordinary solo walk along the Western Front from the Swiss border to the North Sea. Brianna, welcome to the podcast. And let's begin with your story. You're an American writer and historian who chose to walk the length of the Western Front. What drew you to the Great War and why this landscape in particular?
Hi. So I love France and I love history. So I chose to walk the Western Front because it was right on the tail end of COVID, and France was one of the first countries that was actually opening up to the rest of the world. And I have always been drawn to France. It's always been the place that my heart goes to when I travel. It's the first place that I wanted to go when I went overseas. So, and then the Great War was just something that I feel like the world was torn in half. It was torn asunder. It was World War One, and then there was everything after. And people say the same thing about World War Two, but I feel like World War One was not even a precursor, but it was the beginning. So when I got a chance to walk the Western, when I learned I can walk the Western Front, I was like, I have to do it. There's no turning back now.
I know. I've actually had two other people doing exactly what you've done and giving different perspectives on the podcast. So this is why it's so interesting. So many people study the Western Front through books and archives, but few choose to walk it. Why did this feel the right way for you to engage with its history?
I think that the only way to engage with history, it's so easy. It's not easy to read a book, but it is easier to read a book and think that you understand it. But when you go and you experience the landscape and you know, to learn about the atrocities of trench warfare, to learn about all of the military bombardments and the military barrages, everything, all of that, you learn about it and you just can't imagine in your head. You can have the most vivid imagination, but to actually go to that place and see what took place there, I think that's the only way you really can learn history, because that history then stays with you. It's not just this passing fancy or just this thing that you learn. It's something that you actually say, oh, no, I've been to Verdun. I've been to the Somme. I know what the Ypres Salient looks like. And I understand it more than I would if I were to just pick up a book and look at illustrations.
I know. I have been to the battlefield, and it's a sense of that sort of, I suppose, seeing what the landscape, feeling the weather, and, you know, treading in the mud, you know, because it sounds obvious, but until you actually see the landscape, and it's pretty similar to what it was in 1914-18, you can't really get it in the same way.
No. And it's so crazy because you see how rural it is. You know, you do hear trains and you do see cars and everything, but it is still so rural. It's still, you know, you are so close to certain big cities, but you go there and you think, oh gosh, it's all farms, you know, for them to have set up camps and set up fortresses and barricades and trenches. To witness that is just, it's like crazy. It's like they all came to this empty landscape and was like, this is where we're going to start. This is where we're going to fight a war.
So your journey began in 2022, just after the pandemic. How much was this walk also a personal response to that moment in time?
I think it was every part of the walk was a personal response to the pandemic and what happened during that time. I think that the only way for me to have actually processed it was to walk along the Western Front. And in a way, you know, I find as much as history is devastating and it's heartbreaking, I find solace in it, because then you don't feel like this is the only time in history that something terrible has happened. And you can actually kind of take a step back and think, okay, so my way of taking a step back was taking a step forward along a long walk, you know, so you're able to process everything and just move through it. And, you know, your brain moves in that way, too. So when you come across these things, you just think, OK, I get it.
And you traveled across France and Belgium, often camping as you went. What did the solitude of this experience add to your, I suppose, take home from the whole venture?
I think just going to those places and experiencing those things, that it just, you know, you have a better sense of the war. You have a better sense of what it meant to be a soldier, or, you know, I was very drawn to the poets and the artists and the literary giants that fought in the war. So to go to those places and then know that they wrote things in response to that and know that they looked upon that same landscape, I think that was, I was able to take a step back and think, wow, this is so, I get it now. I get it more.
Yeah, yes, I think you're right. The landscape really shapes so much culture post the war, the sort of the feeling, the way that artists take things away and reinterpret in their memory, having served in the armed forces. As an American walking through places so central to European memory, did you feel you were bringing an outsider's perspective, or did the landscape speak in a universal sort of way?
I think that it in both ways, you know, I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm an American walking through a very European part of history until 1917. So you have that idea, but also as a historian, you know, history isn't just, you're not, history is not nationalistic necessarily, you know? And I've read a lot of Faulkner. I don't know if you've read a lot of Faulkner, but in his acceptance speech for the Nobel Prize, he talks about the importance of grieving on universal bones. You know, so it's just that when you look at something like the Great War and you look at the tragedy that it was, it is part of the human experience. It's not just solely French or British or Belgian or German. It's all of us. We are all capable of the most terrible things, but also the most beautiful things. So, you know, in order to tell that story, I don't think you need to be a certain nationality. I think you just need to be human with your heart and your mind open.
And you passed through Verdun, the Marne and the Somme and many other famous battlefield locations. For me, the Somme is really means a lot because my grandfather fought there, and Verdun I found absolutely a terrifying place. What locations affected you most deeply? And
oh, I agree with you. I think that Verdun to me was absolutely terrifying, so much so that when I walked through it, I couldn't walk fast enough. I couldn't get beyond Verdun fast enough, because it's just like you get there and you just feel like you're being absorbed in the landscape. And then knowing about the Zone Rouge, the destroyed villages, and the tragedy that was that battle, Verdun was, I think that was the heaviest response for me in the war. But also the Vosges, because you get to the Vosges and you have, you know, the mountains are not big, but you think, my gosh, they fought in this place. They fought on these precipices. They fought in these big mountains. And then there, and then when Italy got involved, they're like, oh, well, we're going to do it in the Alps over there too. It's going to be great.
Now, your writing contrasts the horrors of war with the beauty of nature. How important was it to show both remembrance and renewal in these landscapes?
I think that that's what I was searching for. I think that that was the most important thing. You know, you come across trenches and you come across, you know, bunkers and everything else like that. But then you also see the trees that have grown up. So you can sit there and harp on the fact that there was once a time where there were no trees and there were matchsticks and twigs and everything, like those pictures, that the photographs that you see of no man's land. But then you can look and say, the world does go on. It's unfortunate and it's sad that maybe we forget or we don't remember as much, but I think that to look upon the beauty of the landscape is to understand the beauty of the human experience as well.
And you've said that the Great War still reverberates today. In what ways do you think the legacy remains with us more than a century later?
In every way. I mean, you look at the Russian invasion of the Ukraine and you think about how much the wars and the border changed after the Treaty of Versailles. You look at what's happening with the war in the Middle East or what's happening with us doing what we're doing in Iran. Everything that happened, it was almost as if all these people got together and they didn't think about what the repercussions were of their decisions in 1914, 15, 16, 17, and up to 19. And then so people were still feeling that. We're still feeling that with the lines that were drawn in the sand. And so I think World War One is so easily dismissed because of World War Two, and people are afraid to touch it and afraid to understand it, because then they have to actually think that, well, maybe that war never did end.
An ongoing debate to this day.
Yeah.
Now, more practical matters for readers, or sorry, for listeners inspired by your story, would you advise others to undertake this walk themselves? And if so, what should they know before they go?
I would listen, if someone's stubborn and they want to walk, if they love history like we do, maybe they would want to do something like that. If for people that aren't as big fans of history, maybe they would choose a different walk. But if they were to walk the Western Front, I think that starting in the Vosges is something that I would highly recommend. And I would also recommend carrying more water, because I didn't carry as much water as I need. And then also to plan your days and maybe give yourself a little more time, because there are places that you pass through and you think, okay, I have to keep on going. But there's other places that you might want to see that, there's places along the Vosges that I feel like I really missed. And as an American, I'm embarrassed to say that I missed the entirety of the Meuse-Argonne. I feel like that's a failure as an American historian to do such a thing. So I would say give yourself more time. I gave myself 36 days, and even that was not enough. So if you want to do it, or do it in spurts, like do a week here, do a week there, and then put it all together towards the end. Don't do it all together, so that way you know, okay, when I go back here, and you have a better idea what the landscape looks like too. And then also plan on, if you want to camp out, I would highly recommend it. And if you want to stay at hotels, just know that there's not public transportation in a lot of places, so you do have to walk, and you can't just call an Uber or find a bus every once in a while.
And just a technical question. How did you navigate the way? Did you follow the Western Front Way that's been opened recently, or was that before it actually was officially existing, so to speak?
It wasn't in official existence, so I had their GPS, so I had the route planned on Komoot, which was a great help, but it wasn't marked. So by the time I got to when I got to Ypres, it began to be marked, but before that it was not marked. So I was, floundering around in the woods hoping that I was going in the right direction.
Yeah, I know the feeling of getting lost in woods, waiting for the angry French farmer to appear. Now,
Does that happen to you?
occasionally, yeah, I've heard rumours of, particularly angry farmers of people walking over their bit of battlefield, especially in Serre, which is on the Somme. It didn't happen to me, but seeing live munitions still there is always a sobering thought. Just staying well clear of them, and actually meeting some people who pick these old grenades up. Gosh, I wouldn't do that.
Oh, me neither. Me neither.
So my penultimate question is, what do you hope readers will take away? There will come soft rains, not only about the First World War, but about peace, resilience, and the modern world.
I just hope that they understand that history is a story. It's not just dates and names and numbers, but that we can walk through it and really have a lived experience of it and reflect upon it. And that's the only way we're going to learn or grow as a human, as humans, is to, and you don't have to necessarily, it doesn't have to be about World War I. It could be about any part of the world that you want to learn. Like, just keep on learning about the world, because the more you learn about the world, the more that maybe we can understand one another, and maybe there'll be less war as opposed to more war. And I just hope that they maybe read it and think, okay, that's beautiful. I want to have experience like that too.
And finally, where can people get the book from?
Amazon, unfortunately. It's available on Amazon because they self-published it. So it is available on Amazon, and you can email me and I can send you a copy as well.
And what is your website, just for the record?
Just for the record, it is theperegrinepilgrim.com. Or you can just look up Brianna Gravatt and that'll just lead you right there anyway.
On that bombshell, Brianna, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Just as an aside, I should have asked earlier, do you have any connections with the First World War?
No, actually, I don't. I don't have any connections. I don't have any family that fought in it. My family had come over from Italy and Poland in the years after, but my connection to it is studying art history and l learning about and loving French Impressionism, and then looking at all the art afterwards and being like, what happened? And why did that happen? So my connection is more to France than it is the Great War.
Yes, I know the feeling about attraction to France. It's just a very addictive place. It is just, one of those places I love going to, and it's so varied across the bits you go to, down in the south or in Normandy or even on the Western Front up near Lille or places like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what I loved the most about the journey, was that you got to pass through all these places, and not necessarily places that you would go if you were to just visit France on its own.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, Bruno, that's brilliant. Thank you very much for your time. I'll switch the recorder on. Where we got to? Come on.
You have been listening to the Mentioned in Dispatches podcast from the Western Front Association with me, Tom Thorpe. Thank you for all my guests for appearing on this edition. The theme music for this podcast was George Butterworth's The Banks of Green Willow. It was performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Krish Russman, and produced by Biz Records. This recording is part of a collection of orchestral works by Butterworth performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and supported by the Western Front Association. This is available from all good record stores under the record code BIS2195. Until next time.